Welcome to the Monogamous Marriage Podcast. We're Kate and Liam, married bisexuals a decade into our non-monogamous journey.
We've been having sex with our friends for 10 years, and we're still madly in love with each other.
We're the authors of the Monogamous Marriage blog, where we've been overthinking sex and love since 2016. This podcast is the place where we process our sexual adventures in real time.
We are not experts, and nothing we say should be mistaken for professional advice. This show contains mature language and sexual content, so if you're under 18, it isn't for you. But if you're a fellow overthinker and you're not freaked out by unfiltered conversation, you're going to feel right at home.
Often when we talk about bodies, what we're really talking about is body image, how we think and feel about our bodies, how our inner world relates to the outer world. And that's a perfectly valid conversation. It can be reassuring to hear that people of all body types have problematic, even toxic relationships with their bodies. But what we talk about less often is how different bodies elicit different responses from the outside world. How even if you're one of the lucky ones who are happy with your body, the world can impose judgment and limits on you if you deviate from the socially celebrated body type, which in modern Western culture is thin and generally white. I hear from people all the time who tell me that they don't see themselves fitting into a swinger setting because they aren't the thin, string bikini wearing body type that they so often see represented in social media. And I feel for those folks. Jumping into non-monogamy is scary enough emotionally and mentally without also having to worry about the way your body will be judged as sufficiently fuckable. So today, we're talking to the personal trainer, sex and intimacy coach, and pelvic floor specialist with over 20 years experience in the fitness industry. She also has a master's degree in feminist anthropology. She's strong and sexy and smart, and she happens to live in a bigger body. Welcome, Cara.
Thank you so much. Gosh, what an amazing intro. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here. I guess we should just say we met at Hedonism just a couple weeks ago at the Naughty Gym Be Better at Being Bad takeover. And I feel, connected very quickly. I was just immediately drawn to your energy.
Yeah, we had an opportunity to connect in a workshop where it was all about energy, right? Like we were gazing into each other's eyes and smelling each other and feeling each other's energy. And I remember being like, this is my type of woman. Like I just felt connected to you. And so I'm so glad that we get to continue our friendship now. So
yeah, I'm so glad to have you here. I always like to start my interviews with going back to childhood because that's where so many of our behaviors and attitudes come from. So tell me a little bit about your family of origin and specifically your relationship to your body growing up.
That's a whole lot there. I'm an only child and my parents were really unlikely partners. I have a very liberal, sex positive, naked positive dad, and a very, sexually conservative mom who, because I'm here, I know that she's had sex.
That's the only indication.
Right. You know, she grew up Catholic. There's a lot of shame around her own body. And so she put a lot of that on me too. But I have to say my dad did too. There were a lot of lessons growing up. Like I was always bigger. And I loved to dance. So that was my activity of choice growing up. And I remember being told by both of my parents that like my body wasn't quite right, that I needed to start changing it like really early on. And so, so my relationship with my body, it does start there, right? Like that with the people that you love and trust the most saying like, ooh, like you're not quite right. So that, and being in the dance world, you know, it's very thin and I wasn't, but I loved to move my body and express myself in that way. And I'm so glad that I had opportunities to do that because the movement of dance made me feel so powerful and sensual and lovely. It was just the messages we get around that tend to tear us down, right? Mm-hmm. So
as you grew up and got into relationships, what was your relationship to sex?
Well, I've always really liked sex. I probably, like, I was really one of the last of my friends to have sex, but very quickly became very interested in it. I was always interested in it as in terms of relationships as well. So I studied anthropology and gender studies, and I ended up getting my master's in feminist anthropology and really interested in like how relationships work cross-culturally. But when it came to like non-monogamy and things like that, I always felt that non-monogamy was for other people. Like I would study it in other cultures and be like, oh, how interesting. But then when I felt that urge to have other partners myself, it was always, oh, I'm just thinking this because I'm not happy with the person I'm with, which a lot of times was also true. But it wasn't until I was in the relationship I am now where I'm very happy. Like Matt is my best friend. We get along so well. There are so many layers that we agree on, like how to parent, how to run our household, our political views, our communication styles, that when I started wanting to have sexual relationships with other people outside of our relationship, when things were so good, including our sex life was so good, I was like, oh, maybe there is something to this non-monogamy thing that actually applies to me too.
So how did that conversation go? Who brought up non-monogamy? Was it you?
Yes, it was absolutely me. And it's so interesting because my non-monogamy journey actually came at a point of real body liberation for me too. So I'd had a lot of feelings about non-monogamy. I had read a bunch of books, like I had read Sex at Dawn and Lust in Translation and Mating in Captivity and then anything I could get my hands on kind of about that. But again, in my mind, it was still for other people. And I had just had my youngest son. He's 7 years old now. And I just felt like my body had betrayed me. It looked different. It felt different. It moved different. I had pain in places I didn't before. I couldn't really seek the change that I wanted and, you know, to like, quote unquote, get my body back after having this baby. And it affected my sense of self and it affected my sex drive. Like I didn't feel sexy when I just didn't feel good in my body in a lot of ways. I didn't recognize myself. And so then my best friend and I had this opportunity to go to Mexico. And it was the first time in, you know, years since I had had my son where my body was celebrated. You know, there's cultural differences, right, of where the ideal body type is. And in the United States, I'm very much not it. But in Mexico, very much more it. And I got to feel sort of what it felt like to take off some of these layers of shame that we internalize from society on how our body should look and really see myself differently. So I wasn't in my body as a betrayal. I was seeing other people appreciate it. And like it helped me learn to appreciate it myself. And I got home and I was like, it's on. I just want to fuck every day. I feel like a goddess. But then in the midst of that, the non-monogamy stuff sort of bubbled up. And so I brought it up. It did not go well. And like, he is such a romantic, and he still is, like, even in this non-monogamy journey, very romantic. But what comes along with a lot of those ideals is that things are a certain way. And so he initially sort of rejected the idea because he didn't want to feel less special. And I get that. I struggle with that too. And it was my idea. So eventually we sort of got to a point where he was like, you know, like I saw how like basically when we were able to have really frank conversations about non-monogamy. It was the first time ever in any relationship I've ever been in where I felt like I could be my most authentic self. And as someone who really loves me, when you see that in someone that you really love, like, it's really hard to deny. And I think that that's where things started for him. And then we were able, like, I think one of the first things we did was have a threesome with another woman. And then he was much more fine with it from then on.
It's like, oh, okay, this is kind of fun.
I am so excited about an event that I am not even going to be a part of coming up in April.
Right. You are not invited.
I know.
Nor are any men. As part of Sapio Tours, I am hosting a Women of the Lifestyle Wellness Weekend. So April 25th to 28th, it's a long weekend. You'll have to make it a long weekend with work. At the end of April, we are going to meet in a lovely modern mansion on the banks of the Potomac River in West Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C. And it will be a group of women who can come together and be creative, be open. We can share and grow, and we are going to be facilitated by Catherine of Expansive Connection. So she's a relationship coach. She's going to lead us through some group coaching sessions. She's also a yoga instructor, so she is going to lead us through some yoga classes. I, as a writing teacher with many years' experience, am also going to be leading some creative writing sessions where you're going to do some reflective journaling type activities. And all of these things will allow us to access some of those inner parts of us that are afraid, that feel shame, that are not able to understand what our authentic desires are in this lifestyle, and allow us to share those things with other women who are on the same path, taking the same journey together. And we are also going to have some luxurious elements. We'll have a chef who comes in to make healthy meals for us, breakfasts and dinners. And it's all going to be in a setting that feels a little like summer camp for women.
Right.
So we're going to bring our comfy clothes and slippers. We're going to share bunk rooms and meals. We're going to go kayaking, and it's just going to be a wonderful time of sharing and growing and being together in a way that the lifestyle doesn't always allow us to be together, outside of the sexual pressures that men might sometimes unwittingly apply.
So if you're a woman who wants to be a part of this event, or if you're a man who's thinking this would be great for my partner, and we've had a few of those men contact us and book the event for their partners, what's the next step?
They can go to sapiotours.com. You can read all about the event there and sign up directly. So there's no need to have a Zoom meeting in advance. You can make your payment right on the website.
Great. Okay, now back to the podcast.
It's interesting that you say that trip to Mexico was a turning point for you, because I think so many people have that experience when they have their first nude beach experience. So for me, it was a big turning point too, because, you know, I went to Hedo for the first time, just terrified. As a person who's always struggled with my body image, I thought, oh my God, this is going to be terrible. I'm staying on the prude side. I'm not going over there. Like, I'm just doing this for my husband. And I went, and within the first 10 minutes, I looked around and realized, oh my God, there are so many ways to be beautiful. And the bodies with dimples and scars and curves, those were the ones that I wanted to look at. I realized that I love a woman with curves. I think something very masculine in me came out, and I was like, oh my God, I just want to, like, num, 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 right? Like, I was so attracted to the curves and the bigger bodies. And I realized that I would hate on myself if I was in that body that right now I'm feeling so sexually drawn to. And what's going on here, right? Like, if I find it sexually attractive, why would I be upset if that was my body? And so it was the beginning of a lot of exploration of what is this that tells us we must be this way and we must chastise ourselves if we're not? And why is sexual attraction different and more open and liberal and widespread than, you know, what I would allow myself to be okay with in my own body? And so it's been such an interesting experience.
Yeah. I think there is something to when you just kind of show up like in a nude beach setting like that. But it's so interesting too, like when you were talking about the difference between your own like sexual preferences for then, you know, what you would want for your own body. And I think that's because of our programming, right? Like our social programming and our evolutionary programming. Like we as humans evolved as social beings, right? So like our literal survival was based on getting along with others and going with the group. So there's something in our lizard brains that think if we don't conform or we don't try to fit in, we literally won't survive. And part of that is in our desirability or our desire to show up in our bodies in a certain way. But we know that we can really see, we really truly can see beauty as it comes in all different sizes. Mm-hmm. And yet our society says that our bodies should only be a certain way. And they're constantly conflicting, right? Like if we're not exposing ourselves to beauty in all different sizes, it can be even harder to sort of grapple with a lot of that stuff. That's where you get the guys, I've heard some of my friends say, guys they've dated would only date them in secret, but not in public.
You talked about if we only see a certain type of body, and you know, that brings me to the topic of representation. And you know, if you scroll through social media and you use the hashtag swinger or non-monogamy, or if you go to the hedonism or desire website, what you're going to see are a lot of thin, string bikini wearing, big boobed women and dudes with perfect pecs and cut abs. It's so prevalent. Why is this problematic, Cara?
Well, because we ourselves in a place, we don't feel welcome there, right? And that goes for all different kinds of oppression, whether it's fat phobia, racism, homophobia, transphobia, ableism. If we don't see ourselves represented somewhere, we don't feel welcome. And I see a lot of the same issues in fitness. Like mm-hmm. there aren't a lot of gyms there that are showing people in bigger bodies unless they are the before picture or they're like the good fat trying to do better. Not that this is just a person, your body trying to be stronger and healthier. It has to be like a journey. And, but I've seen that too. Like when I first started going to sex clubs in my area, I was looking at the pictures for like the theme nights and I'm thinking, oh fuck, I'm not going to fit in here. And the reality is when you go, there really is a lot more diversity, especially depending on the ones you go to. But I was shocked at how different it was on the outward appearance of what they represent versus the people who were coming in. I think how many more people would even come if they felt more welcome, you know?
So what has your experience been like in non-monogamy? You know, once you got through that kind of bumpy initial period of asking for this thing and having your husband be resistant, how has it gone for you so far?
Well, I mean, it continued to be bumpy for a while. In the beginning, I just wasn't really sure what I wanted. Like, did I want to just have like fun, flirty text conversations with people? Did I want like a boyfriend or a girlfriend? Did I want to go on a bunch of dates? Like, what was it that I wanted to do? And I really didn't know. Tried a bunch of things. And the first thing I did was get on the dating apps. Like, I've heard some of your podcasts about going on the dating apps and trying that out. And in some ways, it can be kind of fun. Like, I do love, especially if I do have the time, to sift through some of that stuff because it makes me feel good. I get a lot of connections. But also, it can be a total train wreck. I get a lot of people who don't really understand non-monogamy and they'll give me the like, oh, so your husband doesn't please you. And that's just really annoying to me. Like that's an instant no. Or I get people that treat me like I am just good for sex. And while it's true that I'm not looking for another like serious partner. Like I have a nesting partner. I'm married. We have children together. Like I'm not necessarily looking to bring another person in as a partner. Like Matt is a partner to me. It also doesn't mean that I don't want to have friendships and connections with people. And so to sort of just treat it as like a body to fuck isn't my favorite. Yeah. And so the dating apps weren't super great. So then we started going to the sex clubs. And those are fun. Those can be really fun. We've had some fun experiences there. Got to do some things I just have never done before, which was really exciting. And I like bringing that energy back home. But then the other thing that I did that was a turning point was I joined the Naughty Gym. I wanted to be in a space where I felt like I could just be authentic and talk about all of my stuff. And that was very much a swinger space. And I don't know if it was being in that space where I started feeling like, oh, I might actually be more of a swinger, or if it was that was just sort of my destiny. That was where I was always headed. But that's sort of where we landed. Now, ironically, we've never done a full swap, but the idea of playing with my partner or near my partner or going into sexy spaces with my partner and then doing other things, mm-hmm. I really like that. So something kind of around there is sort of where we ended up. Now, I'm much more flirtatious than Matt is. I'm trying to think of how to say it. He does not ever want to hurt my feelings. And he's very aware of how body image has affected the way that I show up in some swinger spaces. And I've talked about this on some other podcasts, but like him and I have very different body types. Like he is the standard for what men would like to look like. He just is. Oh, that's genetic. He also works on himself, but he and I do the same workouts. And I am not that, you know? So we're sort of an example of how someone could eat the same, do the same exercises, sleep the same, and have wildly different outcomes on how their bodies look because genetics. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that. But when we show up together in swinger spaces, it can feel intimidating for me. Because if it's going to be a swap thing, I look at him and I think somebody's going to be really excited to be with this like ideal man. And then they're going to look at me and be like, oh, my husband's not going to want that because she's bigger. And that comparison fucks me up sometimes. Like I usually feel very confident, mm-hmm. but thinking about a swinger situation is hard for me. Mm-hmm. Body image wise. So mm-hmm. he always kind of steps back and lets me like kind of like go out and do my social butterfly flirting thing. Like, cause he wants to know that I'm getting the attention that he thinks I deserve. So that's sort of how it's been going. We've had a lot of really fun group things. Gosh, we had a ton of fun in Jamaica. I wish we would have had like 2 weeks there because I feel like things were like starting to happen. And then it's like, hey, now everybody go home.
That's always how it is. No matter how long you're there, it will always feel like that.
Yeah.
You talk about the difference in the body types between you and your husband. And I had a similar situation with my ex. So he was 300-pound chef who never went to the gym. So it wasn't all muscle. And we would get looks everywhere we went. People would always give us kind of the up and down, like, what's going on here? And in his case, he was less confident than you, and it just made him very jealous and possessive and very afraid of losing me all the time. But you love a person for their mind and their spirit and the energy, that crackle between you. And, you know, the body is secondary. But when you go into a space where it's kind of like body forward, you make these judgments in a lifestyle situation pretty quickly about like, I want to go over there and talk to that person because they're attracting me in some way. You don't always get the opportunity to make the full impression on people.
I like one of the things that I say to my clients all the time in the fitness world is that the way your body looks is the least interesting thing about you.
Yeah.
And I stand by that. In swinger spaces, like that kind of goes out the window, right? Because I want to be desired. I want you to look at my body and be like, I want my hands all over those curves. That's what I want. And so for me, when I talk about my feelings about this, I get a lot of like, oh, you know what is the most attractive thing for me is confidence. And I find that to be one of the most gaslighty things I've ever heard. Like, I get it, but it's like, it ignores the experience that fat people have in our society. It's saying, so what that your doctor blames every illness that you have on your weight? And so what that you can't find sexy clothes in a store, you have to order them all from a website and then hope that they fit? Like, none of that stuff matters. I'm not seeing any of that. I'm just seeing that you're feeling insecure and you should be more confident because then I'll be attracted to you. And I'm like, no, if you're going to see me and I'm saying these situations make me feel uncomfortable, there's a reason why. It's not just because I'm an insecure person. Nobody's born with insecurity. My children aren't insecure when they're young. My dog's not insecure. Like, my dog feels worthy of every little bit of attention that she gets, right? Same with my kids. This is because we're swimming in this pool of oppression. Like, that is capitalism, that's colonialism, that's racism, that's the patriarchy telling us to be these rugged individuals and they pit us against each other. We're always like trying to like be the best, and then we create these hierarchies. And when there's like binary thinking and hierarchies, when those two things clash, like, it creates shame in people. And I want people to see that part, to see that it's not just an individual by individual. Oh, that person's just insecure. I want people to see the pain and the layers of privilege and intersectionality that goes into someone feeling uncomfortable in their bodies. Cause it's not just like, oh, I'm not that confident of a person. Cause I actually do think I'm beautiful. I really do. But going into those spaces, I want you to be able to look past your conditioning and see me, like really see me. That part that I don't ever feel like is acknowledged.
Yeah, well, we began this conversation on the nude beach at Hedo, both of us being nude, which is awesome. We should have every conversation in the nude. And it was right after a panel on body image. And, you know, there were lots of cool seminars and panels that week. And in that panel, several women and a couple men shared their struggles with body image. And it was mostly body image, so that internal perception of the body you're wearing. And there was lots of vulnerability and emotion in that room. And I really appreciated everyone's willingness to share. But I couldn't help but feel a little bit uncomfortable with the fact that many of the people who were speaking were incredibly fit. And nobody really acknowledged that their experience of the world is different from the experience of those who don't look like they do. And I include myself in this group. I did an interview with April in season one, April from Naughty Gym, and we shared that we had both had struggles with eating disorders in the past. But what we didn't talk about enough was the fact that no matter how real those struggles are within our own mind, and they are real and they are difficult, we walk through the world within privilege. So we're seen as conventionally attractive because we've got the socially accepted body type, and it makes it easier for us, like any kind of privilege. And I feel like it's helpful to have the conversation so that we know I feel this way and we're all feeling this way. And like you said, we're swimming in these expectations that are unrealistic. But the way I walk through the world is different from the way people in bigger bodies walk through the world. And I think we need to acknowledge that and talk about it more. So how did you feel in that panel listening to those conversations?
So I really felt like, first of all, I think it was an incredible way for us to see how this systemic oppression affects every single person. There was a man there who is like one of the most attractive men I've ever seen, tearing up because of his experience in his body. And then like the archetype of white European female beauty tearing up because of her experience in her body. And so I think that that in that way, we see like how it affects us all. And if there had been more time, I would have loved to have more conversation about privilege and intersectionality. Intersectionality is a term that was coined by Kimberly Crenshaw. She was a lawyer. I think it was in the mid-90s, but don't quote me on that. But it was a way for her to explain the way that our different identities intersect. So while I have privilege as a white person, I experience oppression as a woman. Mm-hmm. I have privilege as heteronormative presenting, but then I have oppression as a fat person. You know, so when I walk into a situation or in a conversation like that, I am always looking at where do my identities intersect with the other people's identities who are in this room, and what ways can I be an ally? Because as a white woman, I feel like it is my job in a lot of situations to try to either elevate the voices of people who have less privilege than I do, or to point out the oppressions that people who have less privilege than I do face. And I do that in my fitness career as well. And it can be tricky sometimes because, like, I live in Oregon. It's very white here. I want to elevate the voices of Black and brown people. And how do I do that without tokenizing people as well? You know, which is, you know, maybe a whole different conversation, but like, but that is how I walked away with that situation. I felt like it was therapeutic in the way that sometimes getting the shame that we feel inside onto the outside is really helpful. I also think that it would be really important to talk about some like real steps that we all could make to be more of a community. Because like, if you see everybody is affected by body image, what that tells me is that if I'm not okay, you're not okay. And if you're not okay, I'm not okay. So it strips away this like rugged individualism that I was talking about that comes from the patriarchy, right? And how can we actually take steps to be a community more and more? Like, could we make an effort to change what we see even in our social media, like follow more Black and brown content creators? If we own a business, could we make an effort to post more bodies that don't fit the stereotypical norm? Even if that sometimes means decentering ourselves. I struggle with this in my business all the time. Like, my business is me right now, but I don't want to just work for white women that look like me.
Right.
I want to work with everyone. I want to invite everyone in. And how can I do that in a way that feels nurturing to my community? How can I provide mutual aid? You know, those kinds of things.
You talked about your business, and I know this is veering a little bit off the topic of living in bigger bodies, but I really did want to talk to you about the pelvic floor stuff a little bit, because I'm fascinated. Okay. As someone who has vaginally delivered two very large-headed babies, this is an area of concern. As I get older, I'm also worried more about like peeing when I jump rope. I did a pelvic floor workshop with you leading up to the Naughty Gym Week, and I was fascinated to hear that I was breathing and bracing completely wrong in all of my weightlifting exercises. And I've had a hard time orgasming forever, but I'm a person who carries a lot of tension in my body. So is it possible that all of these things are connected?
Sure. We carry trauma in our pelvic floor. And so you say, oh, it's veering off. It doesn't feel like it to me, because our pelvic floor health is so intertwined with a lot of the beliefs that we have about ourselves, right? Like, if we've had trauma, especially sexual trauma, we store it there. And that sucker gets tight. And a tight muscle, it's not all that it's cracked up to be, right? Like, if a muscle isn't buoyant, if it's not able to relax, it's not able to contract. And you think about, if you want to have a great orgasm, you need a pelvic floor that can relax and then bounce back up and provide that grip and do that multiple times. And so these like really wonderful orgasms that a lot of us are seeking, and I hope that everybody gets to have, it really takes training and working on relaxing that pelvic floor in order to help those things happen. And as far as like breathing backwards and stuff like that, it's so common. You know, I was just talking with somebody about like how culturally we think about like relaxing and letting go and on the exhale. Physiologically, that's not what's happening inside our bodies. The exhale actually contracts the pelvic floor and the inhale relaxes it. So it takes a lot of unprogramming in order to get that breath back on track. But yeah, it definitely can make a big difference over time. Don't give up.
Yeah, it's so weird because you think of that like breathing out is, as you said, the relaxation, but really your body has to squeeze that air out of your lungs, right? In order to get that exhale. So it's such a mind shift to start thinking about, oh, wait, it's the other way around. Yeah. And you know, your body has to relax in order to have an orgasm. Like, nothing in me is relaxed ever. You're so tightly strung at all times. Maybe this is why I feel like a little bit of, you know, a little bit of mushrooms help me have better orgasms. Yes.
As you may know, Kate started a travel company in 2023 committed to organizing a different kind of lifestyle experience based on bringing small groups of non-monogamous couples to European destinations of cultural and historical interest.
Yeah, so for us, we enjoy the big hotel takeovers and the resorts. They're fun, but we were looking for a different way to do lifestyle travel. And for us, the most important thing is making connections with other people. And it can be hard when you're screaming at each other drunkenly over bass music.
Right.
So we conceived of a way to bring together our two loves, the lifestyle and that community, and travel to interesting places. And so last year we took our first trip to Crete and it was an amazing success. Mm-hmm. And so this year we're going back to Crete, June 8th to 15th. And we have three luxury adjoining villas. We've got reservations at all kinds of beautiful restaurants and excursions planned. We have a private yacht booked for one day.
It's amazing.
What? I'm so excited about that. So that's coming up in June. And then following shortly after that, we're going to Italy. We're going to be in Tuscany from August 17th to 24th. We have booked this big, gorgeous Medici villa just outside of Pisa. And again, we've got chefs coming in to prepare meals for us and doing cooking classes. And we're doing excursions to Florence, and you're going to do an art tour, and I'm super excited about that too.
Well, the thing I love about it is that I like to connect with people as individuals. Hard to do at a lifestyle party, easy when you're on a hike, in a museum, walking side by side with someone for 15 minutes or 20 minutes, and just finding out about them as a person.
Yeah, so if that sounds like your kind of trip, you can find out about those trips, which are unfortunately both full. But we will be hosting more trips in the future. So if you want to be the first to hear about those new trips as they are launched, go to www.sapiotours.com and you can get on our mailing list and you can hear about our trips as they are announced.
And now, back to the Monogamous Marriage Podcast.
What's your top tip for women who want to have a healthier pelvic floor?
I would say see what's going on there and see a pelvic floor physical therapist or physio. Okay. But then the second one, if that's not something that you can or want to do, is focus on the breath. I can even take you through like a short core breath right now if you want.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're sitting in your chair, like whatever you do when you're listening to podcasts, I'm always showering and putting makeup on. So as you inhale, I want you to think about your belly expanding and your pelvic floor dropping. And if you need the visual, you can think about like that diaphragm pulls air down into your lungs like the plunger of a syringe. And as it's doing that, your pelvic floor drops and relaxes as well. And then as you exhale, you're going to imagine that you're picking up a blueberry with your vagina or your pelvic floor is like a jellyfish swimming away, and you're going to exhale, push that air out. Inhale, relax, and expand, and exhale, pick up or swim away. And if you're standing doing your makeup, that's even better, because a lot of times if we're standing in this like ski jump position, maybe in the balls of our feet, we're loading more of our pelvic floor, and it'll feel almost like you're zipping up your clit, which is a place where we don't get as much action. Like, we can control the back of our pelvic floor a lot more. Like, if you think about it, you can probably squeeze your asshole right now. But if I ask you to front, it's harder to do because we're not as strong there. Right. And so in that front leaning position might be the perfect position to do that. So for all of you that listen to this, you're putting your makeup on, zip your clit.
Okay. So again, as you're describing that, I'm like, okay, my body feels like it wants to do the total opposite thing. So I'm really going to have to work on this. I have to be very conscious of the breathing connection to my pelvic floor.
Yeah. And sometimes it helps like to have some feedback. So if you put something in there where you can feel yourself kind of contract and relax, that might help too. To give yourself something to like hold on to, as it were, you know?
Right. Like the Kegel balls?
Yeah. Or a finger or a tampon or a dildo, like whatever works. Like maybe a partner. You got to feel that relaxing and contracting. Yeah.
Okay, Cara, this has been so fun. And I am so grateful that you took the time to join me and talk about this a little bit more. Tell people where they can find you.
So you can find me on Instagram at Cara Turnquist with a C, or at push.fitness.salem. And you can also check out my website, which is www.thepushfitness.com.
Great. Thanks so much, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
You too. Good for Kegels.
Bye.
Bye.
If you want to stay in touch between podcasts, you can follow us at The Monogamish Marriage on Instagram, at Monogamish One on Twitter, or you can email us at themonogamishmarriage@gmail.com. If you go to our Twitter or Instagram sites, there are also link trees in our bios where you can find our Patreon, our OnlyFans, and our individual Twitter and Instagram accounts. We would also love for you to like and subscribe to our podcast on whatever podcast platform you use. And if you have time, could you please leave us a positive review? We know that this is asking a lot, but it really does make a difference. Thanks so much. Bye.